Hello and welcome to the Dorsets podcast. I'm Dr. Cody Price, and I would like to introduce you all to my guests today, Priyam Khan and Maureen Stapleton. Priyam is the Director of Community and Legislative Strategies for Celebrate One, a place-based collective impact initiative in the Mayor's Office to reduce infant mortality and improve health equity in Columbus and Franklin County. Before devoting her work full-time to Celebrate One, she served as a policy advisor to Mayor Andrew J. Ginther and worked to create Kiva Columbus, the Columbus Women's Commission, and engaged in social and economic programs and policies to improve the lives of residents in the city of Columbus. Next, we have Maureen Stapleton. Maureen currently serves as the executive director for Celebrate One, the city's initiative to reduce infant mortality. She has over 25 years of experience in organizational development, stakeholder and financial management, strategic innovation planning, and community outreach. She has spent her adult career successfully making organizations stronger and positively affecting people's lives as a public servant and entrepreneur. So thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
To start kind of the discussion that we're going to be having today, can you guys kind of introduce, kind of tell us about Healthy Beginnings at Home and how this program kind of came about?
Sure. So Healthy Beings at Home emerged as policymakers across the state of Ohio were grappling with the alarming rates of infant mortality for Black families. So there's a growing consensus of the role that social determinants of health played. So state policymakers and the legislature and administration began questioning the role that the lack of affordable housing was playing. So the Ohio Housing Finance Agency stepped forward to competitively award funding to research the role that housing might play to improve birth outcomes. So Healthy Beings at Home was established as a collaborative to undertake this research, which is intended to further inform the policy debate. And we have a great number of partners, local and actually one state across state lines, who have helped to design the program, help with research and evaluation, and have been, you know, with us every step of the way. I do want to take a moment and acknowledge our multi-sector partnerships and the partners that truly make up the coalition of Healthy Beginnings at Home. And they are Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority, Homeless Families Foundation, CareSource, Nationwide Children's Hospital, Children's Health Watch out of Boston, Health Policy Institute of Ohio, the University of Delaware, Step One, and of course, our lead national expert on homelessness and housing, Barbara Poppy. Healthy Beings at Home is a scaled model from Care Homes, which is a smaller pilot that was done on the south side of Columbus between Community Development for All People and CareSource, which just included 10 moms. And so we scaled it to 100 with Healthy Beings at Home. And now we're going to embark on system change, which we talked about, pregnancy care pathway and working with the community shelter board.
So can you kind of explain you were mentioning the high infant mortality rate. Can you kind of talk about these numbers, give some statistics to kind of provide some background information about this?
So what we know, Cody, is that in Ohio and quite frankly, across the nation, African-American babies, the term is non-Hispanic white and non-Hispanic black. Non-Hispanic black babies are 2.5 times to 3 times more likely to experience infant mortality or death than their white counterparts. We know that, and we have been tracking that in Columbus for a number of years. So in 2014, coming out of a planning process where, as Priyam indicated, the alarming rate of infant mortality in Central Ohio created an opportunity for community stakeholders to get together and develop a plan that was a 6-year plan that actually ended in 2020. And it was called the Greater Infant Mortality Task Force. And out of that task force, two things that are important for this conversation. First, Celebrate One was born as a coordinating agency to work with our stakeholders and partners to do nothing but focus in on infant mortality, safe sleep, making sure that babies are put down correctly, connecting moms who were otherwise not connected to appropriate services and care, and ensuring that we did as much as we could to addressing the social determinants of health. And so out of that, we realized early on, again, that there was an infant mortality gap in our community. and that gap was getting larger. And so over the last 6 years, we have done a very, very good job of reducing infant mortality in our community. We went from 8.6 during the period of 2007 to 2011, down to 6.6, even in a pandemic. So what does that mean? 6.6 infants died per 1,000, right, in central Ohio. That's a great reduction. Where we haven't had any reductions, in fact, it's gotten a little bit worse, is that the infant mortality disparity between non-Hispanic white and non-Hispanic black babies has increased. As it relates to healthy beginnings at home, we know that one of the major determinants, we knew before healthy beginnings at home, that a major determinant was housing, stable, affordable housing for a mom who was getting ready to have a baby. But we had to prove it. We had to have a study to show the scientific connection between positive birth outcomes and stable housing. And so that's the power of this program. So programs like Healthy Beginnings at Home have allowed us to drive the numbers from my 8.6 in 2007 down to 6.6 in 2020, by the end of 2020, including in a pandemic. But there's still so much work to do because the disparities are as great, if not greater, than they were in 2007.
Are those numbers, did you say, for Franklin County or for the whole state of Ohio?
Those are for Franklin County.
Okay. Do you know how Franklin County compares to the rest of the state?
Yeah, we do. And I'm quite proud to say that we are doing better than what we call the Big C's and the other communities throughout Ohio. We compare ourselves often to Cincinnati and Cleveland, the three C's, the largest cities in the state. And since the beginning, we have always done better in addressing, since we started counting in 2007. And so we can show you charts that actually show the disparity and the differences between the three cities going down. And while we all have made progress, we continue to see greater progress. And I think it's because of the work of Celebrate One, working hand in hand with our partners, our birthing hospitals, our hospital systems, and a variety of stakeholders came together, still are together on a monthly basis, looking at numbers, looking at opportunities to provide programs, and looking at solutions. Healthy Beginnings at Home was born out of that collaborative effort.
Can you go into some of the major goals and outcomes for this program? I mean, obviously, the overarching goal is to reduce infant mortality, but can we go further into what this program is about?
Sure. So I want to give a little context. You know, Maureen talked about some of the social determinants of health that impact infant mortality, and we know housing is certainly a critical one, and quite frankly, one that has prioritized for us, you know, in comparison to the rest. And so we know that safe and stable housing is widely regarded as a key social determinant of health impacting perinatal health outcomes. Housing instability is a major risk factor for preterm birth and low birth weight, on par with risk factors such as maternal diabetes and hypertension. Research findings show that housing instability or shelter stay during pregnancy increases a woman's risk of having a premature birth by 200%. So, you know, we know that although research has demonstrated the impact of being unstably housed on birth outcomes, housing has not been the target of many public health interventions focused on reducing infant mortality. And that's really where we saw the innovation of Healthy Beings at Home, you know, integrating the health and housing to improve birth outcomes. And so the major goals and outcomes for this program, you know, normal birth weights, decreased vulnerability, decreased health risks, increased frequency of prenatal care, improved use of postpartum care. You know, we know that the preliminary findings of Healthy Beings at Home have policy implications for local, state, and federal elected officials and policymakers, for healthcare systems, managed care organizations, maternal and child health services, and housing providers. So we do have a published policy brief that outlines some of our early research findings and policy recommendations. We will come out with a final report that outlines all of our data and our research and evaluation outcomes late spring.
I guess now going in, can we dive into the study? What is be like the intervention that would be putting in place? Can we kind of give some of the study parameters, who is actually in the study, and kind of the outcomes and things that you guys have been learning from that?
Sure. So, you know, we were very intentional about defining housing unstable. You know, we knew that our target population was going to be pregnant women at imminent risk of homelessness or currently at shelter. And so the way that we defined housing unstable was, you know, a woman that was experiencing multiple moves, eviction or risk of eviction, overcrowded or doubled up, a severe housing problem, or homeless living in a shelter or place not meant for human habitation. And so with that, we had a study design, you know, to enroll 100 women, and 100 women were randomly assigned to receive either a housing intervention or usual care. The criteria to be enrolled in the study were, you know, pregnant adult women in their first or second trimester, living in Franklin County, household income below 30% AMI, and enrolled in CareSource. So CareSource was our MCO partner, and so all of the women were CareSource members. And of course, as I described earlier, experiencing some sort of housing instability or homelessness. And so with the housing intervention group, they received rental subsidies, which were time limited or ongoing, and housing stabilization services. And then the rental assistance, just to get a little bit more in depth, you know, 15 months of rental subsidy covering the gap between full market rent and 30% of the participant's income. Then that was followed by a 6-month step down period in which the subsidy decreased gradually until the participant pays full rent. And then some of the participants found housing in units that included a full rental subsidy on an ongoing basis rather than the time-limited subsidy provided by Healthy Being as a Home. And we owe much gratitude to our partners at Community Properties of Ohio and the Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority. In total, they gave us 27 vouchers for our moms, and this is significant. So we know that 27 of the moms in the intervention group are going to have that long-term housing stability, you know, despite this study ending. And so I think one critical component to this study are the housing intervention, you know, the housing stabilization services. So these services, not only did we have the rental subsidy, but we also had these stabilization services that help participants identify housing, negotiate with landlords, remain securely housed when faced with challenges. So each participant had a housing stabilization specialist. And this person was very much their case manager, you know, handheld them through the process of the housing search, negotiating their lease agreement, making sure that things were paid on time. And so this was very much informed by what we call a CTI model, a family critical time intervention. It was a housing first approach. We use clinical best practices with our support specialist. So that included person-centered planning, motivational interviewing, and trauma-informed care. And then they also received services that our usual care group received. So whether that was getting connected to a Celebrate One community health worker, a CareSource case manager, or a Job Connect life coach, which was through CareSource as well. And then just so the audience is aware, the usual care group, they received all of those services, but without the housing subsidy, right? So they didn't receive that rental assistance, the housing support specialist. They were very much working in close with the CareSource case manager, with the community health worker, and making sure that they were connected to resources that they identified they needed at that time.
And so, you know, one of the things that was startling for me, as you know, I've only been here 6 months, and so as a new executive director, as I looked at the report, 40 out of the 51 babies in the intervention group were born full term and at a healthy birth weight. That's huge, right? The majority of them, because we were able to provide additional supports and housing, compared to 24 out of the 44 infants that were in the usual care group. So 40 out of 51 received housing, the other half didn't. And so the other half had a considerable difference in their birth outcomes. Mm-hmm. And that's the wonderful piece that we've learned. Now, is it unfortunate that we could not give housing to everybody? Absolutely, it's a tough conversation. But again, in order to make the case, in order to prove the scientific connection, we had to have that intervention group versus the usual care group. And so, but now that we've known that, we can build upon this and go to funders, including the government, and say, hey, you know, we have proven in a small way, a small control group, that we have actually been able to make impact on birth outcomes, which can tax the system for years to come if we don't address them, right? And it, with some additional financial support, stem off what we know could be long-term ramifications for those moms and those children and those families. That's the power of doing something like Healthy Beginnings at Home. We're now working with our funders to ensure that we can expand it statewide, because once, now that we've proven this, there's a real opportunity to replicate across the state. And CareSource has come to the table, thankfully, with additional resources for communities across the state to begin to do the planning that Priam and the Celebrate One's team did early on to make Healthy Beginnings at Home happen.
Can you kind of talk more about that? Like, what is a usual housing for the control group?
Yeah, and that's a great question, Cody. You know, I think we made sure that even though the usual care participants didn't receive a rental subsidy or a housing stabilization specialist, we were still able to connect them to housing resources in the community. So a key partner in this effort was Step One. And Step One is, if folks aren't familiar, it's essentially a pregnancy hotline that Celebrate One worked to establish. And it makes sure that a woman gets connected to different resources, primarily getting connected to prenatal care appointments and making sure that they eliminate barriers to get to the doctor's office. But they also help with different social and economic conditions that a woman might be facing, including housing. And so we know there is a housing shortage in really nationwide, but certainly in Ohio and Franklin County. I think there's this stat out there. I think we're like 54,000 units short of having actually housing available for all those who need it in this community. And so, to be quite frank, you know, apart from making sure that they were connected to folks like Step One, you know, we would find out about different rental subsidies or vouchers that we would share with these women. But, you know, it's a serious issue in our community and one that needs to be addressed. I know the city is working diligently, the county and the state are working hard to address it. But, you know, short answer, we would make sure they were connected to folks like Step One or community who could connect them to potential resources. But they, you know, they weren't provided that housing subsidy or a support specialist.
So what that means, what does it look like? It looks like a young mom living with her mother or her extended family. It looks like couch surfing. It looks like, just to give you an example, walking into the community shelter board and asking for shelter in a less, you know, advantageous environment. It looks like living on the street. Mm-hmm. That's the difference between the intervention group and the usual care group. And so, you know, I just want to drive it home for your listeners. It looks perilous, right? Yeah. It looks serious. Yeah. So the difference between someone walking in and having a voucher or an opportunity to have housing during the most critical point of their pregnancy to living on the street, living in the shelter, living couch surfing in families, and or living at home with additional folks around you that may or may not be a positive or negative stressor in your life. So that's what it looks like when you don't have the adequate housing.
I had previous guests on here, Move to Prosper. They really focused on moving people to these advantageous, higher opportunity neighborhoods and finding that that has a really positive effect. With your guys' group on finding housing, was it just adding housing, or was it housing in higher opportunity neighborhoods as well?
Yeah, so we initially focused on our high priority neighborhoods. We call them our Celebrate One neighborhoods. Okay. And so these are the neighborhoods with really high infant mortality rates, social and economic challenges. But we found that we would be able to get more housing provided if we were to expand it to include all of Franklin County. And so I will say, in this study, political will matters, right? We had a mayor that was genuinely interested in this issue. He brought together various landlords and developers to the table to talk about this study. And through that effort, we were able to secure housing units with certain landlords and developers dedicated to the program. What we found challenging though in that was that a lot of them were above, either at or above market rate. So we estimated, you know, an average of about $700 per month per participant to pay for a unit. And typically these units that were offered by our partners were 1,000+. And so it was just something that I think our participants felt like they couldn't sustain, especially when experiencing step down and then knowing that subsidy is going to have an end date and having to pay rent beyond that. And so, you know, we kept all of Franklin County open, but again, shortage of units, prices are going up. How do we make sure we maintain housing that's truly affordable for our moms and families?
I think it's important for to reinforce what Priyam said about political will. We have leadership through the mayor who are laser focused on this issue. And we want to keep our citizens inside of Columbus. And so that's why we're focused so heavily on our opportunity neighborhoods. We don't believe someone should have to move someplace else in order to thrive and grow and develop and be a part of, you know, a part of Columbus. And so we are dedicated to those eight neighborhoods, but we will do what we have to do in order to house folks appropriately.
Getting at the current climate, has COVID really impacted the program at all with your participants? And if so, can you kind of talk about how it has impacted it?
Sure. So I think, you know, COVID-19 has exposed underlying racial disparities in health and housing. We know that. We've seen it across our community. And I think specifically for our participants, what we saw was job loss. We saw job loss because of lack of childcare, due to the shutdown of different daycare centers, schools. Many of the women were single households, right? Single mothers who simply just could not go to work because of the lack of childcare that was in their life. And so we did see some of that. You know, I think with the new federal resources available for rental assistance, the opportunity to target some of the resources to pregnant women could have profound impact on health and well-being of infants. So we've been able to leverage some of the COVID-19 relief dollars by the federal government to help some of this effort.
I do think it's important to note for your listeners, Cody, that even in the midst of a pandemic, infant mortality improved in Columbus. So what we have to figure out is what happened in this last year that positively impacted our birth outcomes. That's going to be studied, and it's being studied by Columbus Public Health and a whole bunch of scientific folks around town, because we know that outside of this housing process, something happened in this last year that increased birth outcomes. We know it could be food. There was a variety of nutritional programs that were, you know, flooded into the community when people couldn't get out and get to fresh fruits and vegetables. It could be that folks weren't as mobile and were forced to sit home and not be as active. It could be the fact that during that time, Medicaid rules changed and moms could access care differently, and they didn't need to leave their homes to access care. So while it's not specifically related to housing, I think it's important to note that progress was made and that we are now looking at, and people are studying, what happened in this last year that saw across the state consistent reduction in infant mortality. Something went right. And so if we can find those things and then add those to our next iteration of Healthy Beginnings at Home, we can continue to drive the kind of results that we saw in Healthy Beginnings at Home 1.
Despite the pandemic, all of the women are still housed. And that's truly credit to our fabulous housing partner, Homeless Families Foundation. And we were also due to public and private investment in this study, we were able to have a client assistance fund. And that fund could be tapped into to assist mom or family, not to pay rent, but anything that might be a barrier in paying rent. So let's say there was job loss and mom wanted to get some extra training in, I don't know, STNA, you know, we could help pay for that, or we could help pay for a certification for her to make sure that she eventually gets to that stable income.
So you guys have been able to show the success in Franklin County. How do you see this model really being replicated in other cities or regions throughout the state, or even nationally?
Sure. I think we've seen a lot of interest throughout the state of Ohio. You know, we have great sister collaboratives, we call them, in Cincinnati with Cradled Cincinnati, in Cleveland, First Year Cleveland, in Akron, Full Term Akron, and others really. And we have a great partner in ODH as well, Ohio Department of Health, that has been very supportive and interesting in conversation and continuing this work and funding this work, more importantly. So I think, you know, in terms of replication, there are four key findings for successful replication, right? One, cross-sector partnership is essential. We could have not done this work without the multi-sector partnerships, the strong level of commitment we received from community partners, fully invested, right? Fully invested meaning funding was available, staff and capacity was available, and just the true passion, the genuine passion it takes to work with these women to make sure they're securely and safely housed. And then resilient participants who formed strong relationships with the housing stabilization specialist. That was a critical part of the program. Again, as I mentioned, you know, this relationship really helped navigating any challenge that was a barrier to the housing. And then rental assistance, of course, we can't do it without that rental subsidy, but it's not sufficient. And we saw that. And then racism, trauma, and violence must be addressed. And we've heard this from the participants, we've heard this from the partners, from the community. And so working together to address these very critical issues. I will also add, there is current funding in the state budget.
Yes.
$2.25 million the governor has for Housing for Pregnant Women initiatives. And so we've obviously advocated to at least have a portion of those dollars to help replicate Healthy Beings at Home statewide, hopefully choosing three sites throughout the state of Ohio to be able to replicate this study. We have a great partner in CareSource, and they have provided some planning dollars for communities to replicate Healthy Beings at Home. And so again, the level of commitment we've seen locally and statewide is significant.
What policy recommendations are you really seeing from, I mean, you had the key findings and for replicating this program, there is money in the state budget, as you were saying, that could help grow and expand. And so how do you really see more policy recommendations coming from this to really, like, what is needed?
I think we need to test the model. And that's why we're so happy to have the partner like CareSource that's willing to give a little seed money to the communities across the state who are interested in at least looking at it. We have to move beyond Columbus. The replication and scale are the keys to, from a policy perspective, continuing to show the impact of these programs. We started with 100 women. Mm-hmm. We'd love to see 200 women in Healthy Beginnings at Home too. Because the more people you have, the more scale you have, the larger the results are, and the more the efficacy of those results is greater. And so testing the model, expanding the model, and then scaling the model, I think is probably the most important policy decision that has to be made. And we certainly hope our policymakers in the state are looking. And we know that there are some, as Priyam indicated, that have put money in the budget. And so just based on what they've seen with Healthy Beginnings at Home, there's progress.
I guess going off that too, are there any changes to the model that you guys found that you are going to modify in the new model if it is going to be replicated in other cities?
Yeah, that's a fair question, Cody. You know, I think we were laser focused in making sure we get all of the women housed. And that was like the number one focal point priority for us. And then obviously with that, you have to address some underlying issues or challenges that may exist. And so we call these social determinants of health, right? The ability to pay for rent, the ability to sustain employment, the ability to get to work or a workplace. And so I think the next go around, especially when we talk about replication and we talk about providing technical assistance to our fellow Ohio communities or maybe nationwide, is how can we hone in on the social determinants of health and make sure that there's also a focus on transportation, on childcare, on working with participants to make sure there's financial wellness component, there's job training, workforce development assistance, and that we as community leaders and conveners and partners are making these connections for the participants more diligently, more intentionally, and working one-on-one with these moms to make sure that they are achieving the goals that they set out for themselves when it comes to being able to pay for rent long-term.
I think the other thing that is important to just make sure that we continue to focus on and maybe focus even more on is the health equity lens of the work. Talking to someone at the community shelter board, over 80% of the women who are pregnant, who walk into the shelter board, meaning they need housing right away, are of color. So we know that this is an issue that adversely affects African-American women and women of color. And so using the equity lens to better understand the adverse birth outcomes and how women find themselves in the position is connected to what Priyam just said, which is focusing in on the social determinants of health, but being, again, just honest that this is more adversely affecting women of color than it is others, and then wrapping those services around in a different way because it is specifically addressing a particular community. And that is the crisis, and that is the opportunity. When dealing with health equity, we have to have a conversation with our community that deals with equity versus equality. We may need to do more for a particular community because they are more adversely affected than we do with others, without negating, obviously, the services that everyone needs. But again, doing those services differently and in a different level in some cases is required to get the equity between the groups. And so that's a continued conversation and learning that we are going through as a city. I'm proud to say that I work for a city and live in a county where the leadership, the mayor and the county commission established racism as a public health crisis early on in the conversations. Many cities have followed us, but we were out in front. I'm proud to say that I work for an administration that is laser focused in getting our administration to understand what equity looks like, not just in the health space, but across our departments and our services in our city. It is a tough conversation, but if we are going to call ourselves a working city and a society, we have to address the systemic issues that exist for certain populations, and those populations happen to be communities of color. And we are laser focused on it. It is why we do projects like Healthy Beginnings at Home. It's why we do the other work that we do related to the social determinants of health. And it's why we are doubling down now in what we call Celebrate One 2.0, which is the next phase of our work at Celebrate One. Again, the Greater Infant Mortality Task Force out of 2014, those recommendations were concluded at the end of 2020. And so we have stakeholders from around the city, from science and government and private sector and public sector at our table now, helping us develop the new goals for Celebrate One 2.0, the next phase of our work, 18, 20, 25 months from now, 24 months from now, and 10 years from now, all based on the Healthy People 2030 goals. But we don't want to wait till 2030 to have this conversation. Right. If we do not deal with health equity and the services that our most vulnerable populations need now, we will be having a much worse conversation by 2030. And so we're really excited to have the stakeholders at the table and helping us develop a strategic plan that will be out in July via the roadmap for our Celebrate One 2.0.
Great. And then kind of going off that, how can those that are listening get involved? What suggestions do you have for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'm always going to push advocacy. And so contacting your legislator, signing on or endorsing and helping us educate policymakers and legislators around the housing issue in the local community that you live in, certainly in Columbus and Franklin County. But if you live in another county or city, we know that housing is an issue across the nation. And so, you know, making sure that housing dollars are prioritized in budgets, whether that's a local budget, state budget, national funding, and that folks are aware of how many, especially with our target population, pregnant women enter shelter. You know, we have a little over 350 women enter shelter each year, and those women are predominantly African-American. And that's not even accounting for the women who are unsheltered. So who Maureen alluded to this earlier, living off the streets, right? Due to various different barriers, who the young people in experiencing housing instability who might be pregnant. So the teens, the under 18 year old pregnant women who might be experiencing some challenges for housing. Yeah, I would say contact, you know, get informed, contact your legislators or policymakers and get involved in the conversation that might already be happening in your local community about this issue.
We used to say in our community that it takes a village. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to go back to that. We have become, as a society, it's all about me and my family, and I'm going to stay inside my house. You know, we have so many bedroom communities where you drive in and drive out of your house and you don't even know your neighbors. I think we need to get back to, do you see that neighbor who's pregnant? Are they struggling? Is there something that you can help them with, right? You know, we are our sister's keeper in this. And so if you know of people who are in need of services or you see someone struggling, get them, call Celebrate One. We're there to assist. Call your local social service agency. Do our part to be our sister's keepers. Because if we do not do it now, if you don't intervene now, the outcomes for society and that family are so much greater in the end. I just think we need to be focused on being our sister and our brother's keepers. They're fathers who need support as well. And so just next time you see a pregnant woman, say if she needs some help. If she looks like she's struggling, ask. Tell her about Celebrate One. We are there and we are ready to provide what we need. But just looking the other way when we see folks in trouble isn't going to be the way we're going to be able to move forward as a city and as a county.
So after everything that we've discussed today, what are some of the major takeaways that you wish everybody would know, whether that be about care stores or healthy beginnings at home or the next steps?
Yeah, I think if there are folks interested in either replicating Healthy Beings at Home or just learning more about the program and the study, you know, don't hesitate to contact Celebrate One. And then I will say one of the statements our partners always say, we were lucky to have some technical assistance from Children's Health Watch in Boston, Dr. Megan Sandell. And she always says, housing is a vaccine. Absolutely. If we can accelerate upstream together, is our signature phrase, let's do that and address the key social determinants of health, housing being number one. And then racial equity lens has to be applied. This is something that Maureen has reiterated and something that we've really tried to push as we talk about healthy beings at home locally and nationally.
And if you know of someone who needs support and services, we are here. A simple telephone call or a text to the following number, Cody, can get you connected to someone who can help with the mom that you see is struggling or the woman who has small children and seemingly is struggling. Celebrate One, you can text this number or call this number, 614-570-3592. Again, that's 614-570-3592. Within 24 hours, someone will get back with you and begin to help connect you, if indeed you or the person you're calling for, to the services that they may need.
I want to say one sentence, and essentially it's, women who received housing assistance experienced better birth outcomes than those that did not receive this assistance.
Great, thank you. So finally, if both of you could recommend a book for everyone to read, what would it be and why?
So I will say Evicted by Matthew Desmond. So actually, Matthew Desmond came to Columbus to do a talk, I want to say, just right about the time we were launching Healthy Beings at Home. And if you haven't taken a read, it's so, so critical in just the housing conversation that's taking place right now, especially as it obviously relates to evictions. A lot of the stories that are real stories and based in Milwaukee, so right, not Columbus or Franklin County, but they are very, very similar or pretty much the same as the stories we hear from our families. And so just really understanding from a deep personal lens, the struggle of being on the brink of eviction, you know, not being able to pay a rent month to month, some of the barriers and challenges that some of these individuals and families face. It's truly an enlightening read, one that I really, really enjoyed, and he just does a fabulous job.
I'm actually listening to something that I read a couple of years ago, and it was one of the toughest reads that I've had in quite some time, and that is Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates. It's a letter from him to his son about racism and symbolism and how he should prepare himself to navigate the world. It's a tough read, but for people who want to have an understanding and a lens why equity matters and why programs like Healthy Beginnings at Home are there because there are some systemic issues, it's a good read, but it's a tough read.
Thank you guys so much. And thank you so much for taking the time today to speak with me about Healthy Beginnings at Home. It's been really great hearing more about the program.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Cody.
Thank you so much for this opportunity, Cody. Really appreciate it.
To my listeners, please be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe to the Doorsteps podcast so that you don't miss any updates about housing issues in Ohio. You can also follow the podcast and other research that the Office of Housing Policy at the Ohio Housing Finance Agency does by following our Twitter account at Ohio Doorsteps. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Cody Price, and this is Doorsteps.